My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Pete Seeger's classic song, Turn, 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 based upon the first eight verses of the third chapter of the biblical book Ecclesiastes, says, "To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven." How is our life affected by the energy of the turns and returns of the heavenly bodies in our solar system, the stars, and beyond? How do the seasons of our life afford us the opportunity for learning, growth, and wisdom? And how can our understanding of this enable us through youth, middle age, and the golden years without experiencing the misnamed midlife crisis? My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Virginia Bell, says the secret to this is to understand the great generational cycles of our life to be better prepared for both the challenges and the rewards. Virginia has been a full-time astrologer since the 1990s. She writes a horoscope column and celebrity profiles for the CBS magazine Watch. She's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and has written astrology columns for magazines including TV Guide and Us Weekly. Virginia has her sun and moon in Taurus and Virgo rising and joins us to discuss her new book, Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. Please welcome Virginia Bell. Good evening, Virginia.
Hi, Victor. Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Wonderful to have you with us. I had the pleasure of meeting you at your recent lecture at the lecture on presentation at the ARE of New York, and was surprised to learn that the study of astrology actually came a bit later in your life.
Yep, I'm a late bloomer and a slow learner, Victor.
Tell us about your path before astrology, please.
Well, I actually have had three lives, and at 19, I went to Europe, and I actually had been, we were talking earlier about Great Neck, and I grew up in Great Neck and modeled and in high school, and afterwards moved in the city for a year and did more modeling and dancing. And then at 19, I went to Europe in Rome. Those were the golden times in the early 60s in Rome. And the spaghetti westerns, De Sica, Fellini, it was an incredible moment there. And you were able to get work easily. And in the Italian films, you didn't have to speak a word of any language because they dubbed it. And plus, there were a lot of American films being made there at the time. Agony and the Ecstasy. Gidget Goes to Rome. I was an understudy for Gidget. I mean, I didn't have a big career, but I traveled a lot and had a lot of adventures. And then towards my Saturn return in my late 20s, I realized, you know, what am I doing with my life? You know, I really wasn't going. I was traveling, having a lot of experiences, but I wasn't really, my career wasn't going forward. And I came back to New York and actually worked as a screenwriter and story editor for Allied Artists for a number of years. And then I decided, you know, I have to do something on my own. What could I do? I hadn't really any big experience, hadn't gone to college. I was obsessed with two things, food and exercise. Being a double Taurus, which means you have your sun and moon in the sign of warm scones and creme fraiche. You know, we love food. And the food won out, so I opened a restaurant here in New York. That's my second life. On 10th Street between 5th and 6th, in 1974, it was called Whole Wheat and Wild Berries. And everybody said, what are you doing? You have no experience. I never went to culinary school. I worked as a waitress a couple of times, but I mean, I wasn't looking at the industrial equipment, if you know what I mean. I wasn't studying anything, you know. But I had this feeling, I had a vision of food that could be natural food, vegetarian food that could be not just macrobiotic, but exciting and sexy and sensuous, you know, because at that time in the 70s, there were a number of microbiotic restaurants in the village, but the food seemed to me boring and not very sexy, you know? And so I wanted to combine healthy food with gourmet recipes, and that's what I did. I had a vision, nothing else. I didn't have any experience or anything, but I opened it on 10th Street there, and it took off, believe it or not. And that was my Saturn return. That was a big thing. At our Saturn return around 29, we get serious about something. We, you know, we take on a commitment. We go back to school, or we, you know, start a family. We commit to a marriage. We get sober. If we're doing it right, we find some challenge, and we grow in the process, and we get those Saturn skills. Saturn, I call the Dr. Phil of planets. Get real. How's it doing for you? You know, it's about reality, responsibility, hard work. But Saturn isn't all bad. It helps us to grow, helps us to become mature, really. And then after my midlife crisis, actually, I decided to open 8 years later. The restaurant took off, actually, and it was a wonderful experience for me. I really did heal a lot of things in my life there. I learned how to work, show up. So I opened that restaurant in 1988 with my sister, and we were doing great in the summer, 350 brunches. But in the winter, it just died. It just died. And I poured more and more money into it. And put my pressure on the restaurant in the city. And it was just, it was an incredible time. I was going back and forth on the train like a package between one restaurant and the other. And I was stressed out. But here's the beauty of that, is that one of my favorite sayings is how far high failure overleaps the bounds of low success. Mm-hmm. Somebody, a wonderful woman I met up there, she and her husband had a weekend house there, and I sometimes drive back with them to New York City. And one night, it was a Sunday night, and she was reading out loud this book by Stephen Forrest, The Inner Sky. And I was mesmerized because I loved astrology. I never thought of being an astrologer. I mean, I didn't think I was smart enough to do the math, but I had an astrologer at the restaurant who ate and signed, and myself and some of the staff would get readings. But I thought astrology is like, I'd run over there to the astrologer who lived off Greenwich Avenue in the village, and I would run over there between shifts and say, okay, you know, when am I going to meet my soulmate, and is the chef going to give notice, or, you know, so... You know, I thought it was all about predictions, and I had no idea that it was so deep and psychological and spiritual, really. And that book changed my life. And this woman, she had written Stephen's phone number in the back of the book. She never called him. I don't even know why she had it in there. And that was the other thing, because when she read it, I said, oh, that's great. I'll go buy the book. She said, well, you can't. It's out of print. I said, well, oh, can I borrow yours? She said, yes, but not yet. I need it, and so forth. So I guess I had to go to the Berkshires to get that book. And so I began getting readings from Stephen and listening to them on the train up to Hudson, where I'd have a cab pick me up every week to take me to Massachusetts. Oh, it was wild. And, you know, my life was so stressful that that was one little area that wasn't contaminated by the stress. And it brought me a great deal of joy, and I started reading about mythology and some of the great astrologers that I didn't know about, Liz Green and Howard Sisfortas, and it was an area that brought me a lot of pleasure. And finally, I couldn't give that restaurant away up in the Berkshires. I closed it and then was focused on the restaurant in the city. But in the early 90s, the economy wasn't great, and I needed a new air conditioner. I couldn't afford it. So I began to look for a buyer, and I did. And in 1995, I sold that restaurant, and that was beginning of my third career.
Carl Jung coined the phrase synchronicity.
Yeah.
And in my life, synchronicity has played a tremendous role. You had mentioned seeing this gentleman's phone number in the back of the book and connecting with him and moving you to this career in astrology. Do you think that was a synchronicity?
Oh, totally, totally. And it's come full circle. He wrote the foreword for my book, too. Yeah, it was meant to be, you know. I guess I had to go up to the Berkshires to do that. And we don't know why we're in a certain place at a certain time. Sometimes it's not for the reason we think.
Two little notes for our listeners. Number one, the Berkshires, if you've never been there, are a beautiful, beautiful section of Massachusetts. The home of the Kripalu Center, for those who are practitioners of yoga and also want to study various mystical arts at the Kripalu Center. It's the home of Alice's Restaurant of the Arlo Guthrie song fame. And also Arlo Guthrie has an interfaith church up there near where Alice's Restaurant used to be. So if you ever have an opportunity to visit the Berkshires, absolutely do. And James Taylor immortalized it in his song Sweet Baby James, where he said, the 1st of December was covered with snow, and so was the turnpike from Stockbridge to Boston. And Stockbridge is in the Berkshires, a very beautiful place. And if you've heard a couple of sirens in the background, and you're listening to two New York kids here, I'm in Queens, and she's in Manhattan, and that's the reality of life in the big city. You hear the sirens once in a while, so please indulge us and understand that's where we are, and that's what we do. And because we're recording this, you're getting the reality of New York right now. My guest tonight is Virginia Bell. She's the author of the brand new book, Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. And we'll be back with more of Virginia and astrology after these messages on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Ranger Station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. And you can hear it repeatedly without feeling anything. But when we introduce a new stimulus, save the food. We've achieved pulling a natural or inborn response from you. Save the food. Because 40% of all food in the US never gets eaten. Save the food. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Virginia Bell, author of the book Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. So a lot of us know or think we know about astrology. What's the actual origin and history of astrology?
Well, astrology goes back to ancient times, probably before language. There was, characters, symbols written in caves. And people have been looking, up to the stars for inspiration and answers, forever, basically. But really, I think it was in Mesopotamia that the actual art or science of astrology began and spread. And it's really a combination. I mean, astrology, yes, there is math involved and there in that sense, but it is also an art, you know, it's intuitive as well. So it combines a lot of things. I mean, you know, when you look at the actual chart, which is a picture of the sky at the moment of birth, and that is frozen in time. That never changes. It's a little piece of your cosmic DNA. And as Carl Jung said, anything born at a moment of time has the energy or the essence of that moment. So it's basically a map for your life.
Now, you mentioned ancient Mesopotamia. They had certain abilities to see the sky. And yet, with the advent of greater telescopes in the Renaissance and in the Middle Ages, the sky opened up to new vistas for many people. How did that change astrology?
Yeah, that's a great question, Victor, because up until, 1781 is when the planet Uranus was discovered. So up until then, the astrologers really used all of the planets, the visible planet, you know. Well, of course, the Sun and Moon and Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter and Saturn. Saturn was the last the most outward planet, but it was still visible. Then in 1781, I think it was Herschel, last name Herschel, discovered Uranus. And when a planet is discovered, tells us a lot about its character. So Uranus was discovered between the American and French Revolution. And so it's associated with freedom, individuality, rebellion, challenging the status quo. And that changed the whole astrological landscape at that time. And then in, 1849, the planet Neptune was discovered. And Neptune is a planet that is associated with the invisible and the unseen, with the sign of Pisces. And of course, Neptune is Poseidon. It rules the water, the sea. And that was around that time was the creation or discovery, I don't know what you call it, of photography, hypnosis, all of those things that have to do with imagination and visibility. And so Neptune is associated with compassion, caring, spirituality, as well as the unseen world. Then in 1930, Pluto was discovered, and Pluto, you know, in mythology, the god of the underworld, the god of birth, death, and transformation, is a pretty heavy dude. And that was the rise of Hitler, the rise of organized crime, but also the rise of psychoanalysis. Pluto has to do with the taboo, whatever we keep repressed and hidden as a culture, but also as a person, as an individual, as Carl Jung would say, the shadow. So that changed everything, and now there are new planets.
Poor Pluto must need psychoanalysis after it was downgraded, huh?
Well, yes and no, because first of all, Pluto, I think, said more publicity for me, you know. The other thing, there was a very famous astrologer, financial astrologer, who said at the time Pluto was demoted, you can shove Pluto where the sun don't shine, it ain't gonna make a difference, you know. And in fact, the astronomer who discovered, I think it was it Eris or Sedna at the time, which changed everything because they were bigger. I think it was Eris, was bigger than Pluto. He actually has a very strong Pluto in his chart. He was born in the mid-60s. And the other thing, too, about that situation is that there were not all the whole group of astronomers. There were just a small group that voted. And Pluto's pretty powerful. If you have a transit, you have Pluto in your life by it's affecting your chart. You know it because it brings you to your knees. It is it's about a crisis, but a crisis that can transform you.
Absolutely. Now, many people think of astrology as the daily sun sign columns in newspapers and magazines. How do these differ from actual readings with a professional astrologer?
Okay, well, that's a good question. When you read your horoscope in the newspaper or magazines, you're reading your sun. Your sun is in that sign. Like we're in this Taurus now, and the sun is in Taurus. So, you know, we each have a sun sign. And when you read it in the paper, the astrologer who's writing that is really just writing about your sun. That's why sometimes it's right on the money, because the sun is the biggest ingredient in the chart and in this recipe called our astrology chart. But it's not the only thing. There's also the moon, and there's the rising sign and all the other planets. So you're not getting nuanced. That's why sometimes it's right on the money. Often it is. And other times, you know, you read and you say, this doesn't really sound like me, because it really is general. But it also, you know, I write some of these columns and it's inspiring for people. That's how I learned about astrology. I think many of us did, reading the horoscope magazines. I did when I was just a teenager, a young teenager. I was reading those magazines, looking for a little hope and inspiration. And I think many people got into astrology that way. But now, what's so incredible now, astrology is really having a renaissance because of the internet. All you have to do is, you know, Google a free astrology chart, and you get all these different websites where you can type in your name and your birthday, and they give you, you know, show you your chart. You can print it out, and they'll even give you an explanation of all the different planets.
Now, please describe, if I came to you as a professional astrologer for a reading, how would we start?
Well, look at the chart. I like to explain the chart. You know, I like to do a little teaching, and because if somebody doesn't know astrology, you know, what is a house? What is a sign? What is a planet? So I like to, you know, explain how the planets are, you know, like the verb, they're the actors in the play. The signs are how the actors express themselves. And the houses are the 12 slices of pie in the circle of the chart, and that's where the action takes place. So I do a little explaining about that and look at the natal chart, because the natal chart is your character. It tells you your strengths, your weaknesses, your wounds, and how to heal them. So that is your foundation. And then, of course, everybody wants to know what's happening now. Okay, who doesn't, you know? So then we look at, as I said earlier, the picture of the sky at the moment of birth, your natal chart, that never changes. That's frozen in time. But where the planets are today, and are they do they have a relationship with any planets in your chart? That's what tells us what you're going through at any given time.
Okay, now we talked about the sun, the moon, and the ascendant. So you're double Taurus in sun and in the moon, and Virgo ascendant. What properties does that give you?
It's a lot of earth. You know, if I didn't have a Gemini, I'd be in bed all day watching Downton Abbey and eating ice cream, you know. Well, the sun and the moon, those are the two most important symbols in the chart. The sun is your identity, your life force, your energy. You take good care of your sun, you stay pretty healthy and sane. You take good care of your moon, you stay happy, because the moon is your feelings. It's your intuition. It's your mother. It's how you mother yourself. So those two symbols are very, very important. And so we look at, what does that sign need to stay healthy, for instance? For Taurus needs cozy. It needs downtime, soul time, physical security. It needs financial security too. Taurus doesn't like change, so there's always a, you know, a high and a low, so to speak, or a shadow of the shadow of Taurus is being stubborn, not being able to let go of things. Like me, it takes the jaws of life for me to even change my coffee, you know. That's not a prediction for people, but it's on the spectrum. So each sign has certain qualities, certain things that it's attracted to. It has its gifts, and also it has its dark side that comes with the territory.
Now, you'd mentioned 12 houses. What if there's nothing in one of those houses?
Oh, that doesn't mean anything, because, Victor, there's basically 10 sun and moon and 8 other planets. So, you know, and Mercury and Venus travel very closely with the sun, so there's always some empty houses. That may not be what you're majoring in this lifetime. We all take math, but we all don't become accountants, you know? We all have a major, and, you know, for some people, the planets are spread out, and there may be one or two empty houses, but nobody has no empty houses, you know what I mean? But many people have, like, clustered, the planets are clustered in one area. You know, it's like you can climb any mountain. You got to make sure it's the right mountain. You know, some people are specialists, you know, and other people are, you know, they're more spread out. So where you have the planets, yes, that makes a big difference. And if they're all clustered together, or are they all on one side of the chart or the other, all of that kind of goes into reading a chart.
Absolutely. My guest this evening is Virginia Bell. She's the author of the new book, Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. Virginia, please tell our listeners how they can get your book and find out more about you and the wonderful work that you do.
Oh, thank you, Victor. Well, the book is in stores now, but it's also on Amazon. And my website is virginiabellastrology.com. And I'm on Facebook, Virginia Bell, and I have a Virginia Bell Astrology page and You Are Never Too Late page on Facebook as well.
And as we share every week, please, if you have a local bookstore, and those are becoming rare commodities, please visit it and get Virginia's book there. And if they don't have it on the shelf, say, I want you to order Virginia's book from me, Midlife is Not a Crisis. And we'll be back with more of astrology and Virginia Bell after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Every Tuesday on Living with Moxie, join Shefali Burns and Donna Martouge in conversations designed to take you to the next level, where we highlight ideas, resources, and strategies that provide you with the leverage you require to meet and exceed your business and personal goals. Each week on Living with Moxie, we will lead conversations related to success, achievement, fulfillment, and extraordinary, vibrant living. Are you ready to live with Moxie? Join us.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Virginia Bell, author of Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. So we're talking a little bit about our sun, our moon, and our ascendant signs, and here's mine. My sun is in Capricorn, my moon in Aquarius, and Cancer ascendant. What general traits would this give me?
I love that. Wow. Well, first of all, the Capricorn is a sign that, you know, people often associate with business, banking, government, those kinds of things. But on a deeper level, Capricorn is about excellence and integrity. It's doing something in the outer world that expresses who you are inside. You need a calling, a mission, not a job, Victor, right? Mm-hmm. And Capricorns are late bloomers, too. I think it's great to be a late bloomer because you get better as you get older, you know? And you really come into yourself. Many times Capricorns are born old and they get younger as they get older.
Amen.
Right?
Absolutely.
And Moon in Aquarius, okay. Was your mother ahead of her time? Did she have a career or, was she unusual in some way?
My dad got very ill when we were very young, and she became the head of the family and the caretaker of the family when we were very young.
Well, Aquarius is ruled by Uranus, and it is, you may be a serious Capricorn with a strong work ethic and a lot of integrity and ambitious, but your moon is your heart. So you've got the heart of a rebel, the outsider, you know, ready to challenge the status quo, step outside of the mainstream. Aquarius and the planet Uranus that rules your moon is associated with anything that is not unusual, original, outside the mainstream, like, you know, all the subjects that I see you talk about. You see that astrology, all sorts of esoteric things, anything outside the norms. It's associated with that planet Uranus that was discovered in 1781. Mm-hmm. So being very serious, Capricorn, about subjects that are outside the mainstream.
Of course, Cancer ascendant makes me the caretaker supreme.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Cancers are the mothers, the fathers of the zodiac, your rising sign is how we meet the world. It's our mask. It's our brand, as they say today. It sounds superficial, but it's not, because we all need a style to navigate through life. So Cancer people, see you, and there's something warm and something caring and compassionate about Cancers, but they're cautious, especially when they're young. They can be very cautious and careful. You have to be able to the good news is about Cancers and Cancer rising is you're the mothers, fathers of the zodiac. The bad news is you're the mothers and fathers of the zodiac, taking care of the whole world and sometimes not taking care of yourself.
Yep.
You know, so, but that's a very interesting combination. And to me, the little I know about you here doing this work, it fits perfectly.
Absolutely. You know, you're mentioning about taking care of everybody else and not taking care of myself. And you also talked about lessons later in life. And absolutely, my lesson later in life was to take care of myself. And over the last 10 years, I've made some significant changes in my self-care, which has actually made me more active and stronger and more out in the world than I was when I was in my 30s. So 100% right.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, I have found, Victor, as I've gotten older, I've felt better. Yeah, hopefully we're wiser. We have some miles on the meter. We have some skills, some experience, and maybe the hormones are less, but so is the drama. I find, people say about getting old is hard. No, for me, young was hard.
Yep.
With no skills, no support, and pretty crazy. You know, that was hard. Getting older is, I find, a lot easier. That I would never have believed it.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. One more point on general astrology before we start getting into your book. Let's say that two people are born at the same exact time, on the same exact day, in the same exact year. Would they be the same?
There would be a parallel. There would be parallel. And, I'm trying to think of an example, because, look, rare that you find someone born, it's not rare that you find someone born the same day, same year. Not at all. But the same time. That would be tricky. There would be parallel because there are studies of twins who were separated at birth and they were both adopted by different families and they had very similar life paths. you know. But also, I'm trying to think, Carolyn Mace, the spiritual teacher, do you know who she is?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, of course, you would know who she is. Well, she was born the same day, same year as Karen Hamaka Zondek, very well-known, highly respected astrologer in Holland. Both of them have written about a dozen books. Both of them have two schools, you know, Carolyn with spirituality and her work, and Karen Hamaka Zondek, a school of Jungian psychology and a school of astrology. And so, and Carolyn Mace said if she wasn't doing what she does, she would be an astrologer.
Oh, that's funny.
See a parallel life. Also, George W. Bush, I think, was born the same day, same year as Sylvester Stallone. Interesting. Ooh. So you actually, there was a whole thing on Google or Yahoo once, and nothing about astrology, just people or celebrities who are born the same day, same year. And if people Google that, you would find it. So interesting parallels. A director who worked with this actor, I can't remember the two, but they worked together forever and things like that.
Your book, Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. Now, we're going to talk about some of the specific returns that you mentioned in the book, but generational life cycles, how is it that we share these cycles at specific ages?
Well, basically, you know, there are two things in astrology, you know, like Saturn is in Sagittarius right now. So, I mean, anybody who's a Sagittarius out there, they've probably over the last 2 years while Saturn's been in Sagittarius, Saturn, the planet of reality and responsibility, have had more burdens, more challenges, but hopefully grown in the process. That can happen to anyone at any time. The generational cycles are cycles that the planet is not making an aspect to another planet, it's making an aspect to itself. Okay. In other words, the Saturn takes 29 years to go back to where it was at birth. So it's a return, like we have a solar return every year when our sun comes back to where it was at birth. That's our birthday. So 29, we have our Saturn birthday. So these generational cycles happen when the planet makes an aspect or relationship with itself. And we all have that at the same time. And oftentimes people say, well, that's, you know, it's very general. It's very general, but so is a bar mitzvah. So is a christening or when we graduate from high school. But these are major passages. They're initiations, and they're very powerful. It's sort of like there are power places in the world. There's also, you know, like Glastonbury and Sedona, they're also power years. And these cycles, these generational cycles, are kind of opportunities for us. Something shifts at those times, and we have a chance to make some big changes in our life.
Now, you'd mentioned earlier in the show talking about the first Saturn return, which happens at age 29. What
right.
happens during that first return? What are the principles of that first return?
Well, the planet that rules that cycle is sort of like your guru, your coach, your guide. So Saturn, the planet of self-discipline and reality, boundaries, limitations. But basically, we grow up at our Saturn return. Saturn is a, you know, it has a bad reputation, you know, because it's hard. It's not bad, but it teaches us self-discipline, maturity, work ethic. So at around 29, we get Saturn, we get serious. You know, we, even if someone has a big career, maybe like a rock star or like Celine Dion, who had 20 albums, that she had done, but she wanted to get pregnant and she couldn't do it while she was working. So she put her career on hold to have a child. So that was her Saturn return. Someone else may begin a career at that time or, you know, get sober like Rob Lowe and Bradley Cooper both got sober at 29 and they spoke, you know, quite publicly about it. We begin something, no matter how. What you may have a big job in a hospital or on Wall Street in your 20s, but there's still something that's not quite an adult yet until 29. Something shifts. And if we're doing it right, we take on some project, some commitment, and we work our butts off and to make that happen, and we grow in the process. That's a Saturn return.
So in other words, people in that Saturn return, for example, might buy their first home at that point.
Good example. Or
might get married. I see a lot of people getting married later, around
yes.
29 and 30. That's part of that Saturn return.
That is. Kate Middleton and Prince William got married. They were both 29 when they got married. Sometimes it brings a mentor. That was true of Carl Jung, became involved with Freud, and Georgia O'Keeffe met Alfred Stieglitz. It was the beginning of her career and her marriage to him. Oh, somebody, a mentor can also often be Saturnian, not necessarily older, but more mature.
Okay. And I'm thinking back to my life when I was 29, and I was 3 years into my second career. My first career, I spent 6 years in the Air Force, got out, went into business. And I remember, but at 29, something else changed in me. And that was a sort of a reawakening of the spiritual life that I knew as a child, not necessarily religious, but spiritual life that I knew as a child. And those started stirring in me once again. Is that something that happens to a lot of people?
Absolutely. That's when Buddha left home.
Ah.
Yep. Yeah. And people often move to the place where they will live during their Saturn, often move to a new place. Like Oprah moved from Baltimore to Chicago. She got that big job. Isaac Dennison, that was when she moved to Africa at 29. Of course, at her another return, she wrote Out of Africa. Was it Out of Africa? Yeah, I think it was Out of Africa, right. Yeah, so oftentimes people move. Gertrude Stein moved to Paris and started her salon.
And we'll talk more about these life cycles and their corresponding planets when we get back with Virginia Bell in her new book, Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life, after these words from the OM Times Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
My name is Lola Silvestri, and I'm going to be 95 this year. I was very independent. I fell, and I had to have Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on OM Times Radio, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Virginia Bell, author of Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. So, Virginia, before the break, we were talking about the different cycles and different major cycles in life. We talked about the first Saturn return at age 29. Now, you say that midlife cycle peaks around age 42. What can people expect approaching age 42?
Well, for one thing, midlife is a pretty big cycle because it begins in the late 30s, and then that's when Pluto makes a square to itself. So oftentimes there is some kind of, look, I don't want to say crisis in a negative way, but something either comes from within that says, you know, is this it? Is this my life? I'm, you know, working during your 30s and you build something, and then all of a sudden, you know, whatever is on the back burner begins to call you, whatever you haven't done. So the first part of midlife, it has three, it's like the hero's journey, you know, you leave the known for the unknown, and it always has three parts. And the first part, the Pluto part, is that as often is some kind of loss or crisis, or maybe it's just a feeling inside that you know, you feel like there's something more, or maybe there's something that happens on the outside that causes you to look within. Maybe there's a loss, or you lose your job, or you get divorced. But it's a crisis that leads to a transformation, and Pluto is always an opportunity to look deeply and honestly about what frightens us, what we haven't dealt with. So the first part of midlife is looking at whatever we haven't cleared up. And you can't change something unless you're aware of it. So you do the deep work, you do the therapy, or you go into recovery, whatever it is. And it's different for everyone. Not everybody, if you're living in integrity and you're happy, it may not be so dramatic. But maybe if you're in a relationship you're not happy with, or in a job that is not challenging you, then it's going to be perhaps a bigger response to that. But that's the first stage, is Pluto in our late 30s, then like around 42, or, you know, it's a little bit later now because the planets travel at a different speed. Uranus makes an opposition to itself. Uranus takes 84 years to go all the way around the chart and come back to where it was at birth. And so at 42, half of that, Uranus opposes itself, an old life is over and a new one begins. And if you look at people's life, many people made some enormous change. I mean, that's Bill W. was drunk in the street. That's when he got sober and started AA. Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat, you know, on that bus in Montgomery. Ellen DeGeneres came out as gay. Steve Jobs went back to Apple. Jung broke away from Freud.
Major changes in that period.
Yeah, Georgia O'Keeffe discovered New Mexico, and she left New York. That was her spiritual home. So there's Uranus is that planet. It's electric. You know, it rules Aquarius. So it has a lot to do with, you feel restless. You feel like you're living in Starbucks, so to speak. And it's not running away from something, it's going towards it. Whatever we've left out on the back burner begins to call, sometimes loudly. Like women, a lot of women have their first child around 40. That's not unusual. Or like Ted Turner, he left his work. You know, he's working very hard. He left his career. And for a year, he took his sailboat. I think it was called Freedom. And he went around the world. So whatever you haven't done, oftentimes people who have not been involved get married, other people are married, doesn't mean the relationship will break up, but if there's something there that's not working, it comes to the surface.
Okay, between 49 and 51, we have the Chiron return. Those familiar with Greek mythology know Chiron is the half-man, half-horse demigod who was a mentor to many of the Greek heroes. What does Chiron, as a moon of Saturn, bring us when we reach 50?
Oh, I love Chiron because he was very beloved in mythology. It's a time for healing. That is a time for real healing. And you know, there's certain things that we just can't deal with until we're 50. And at the Chiron return, it's an opportunity. People change their lives. Once again, it's like a window opens where there was a wall or a doorway. And sometimes we change our story, we change our life. But a lot of it is, it's about healing. And many, because around for women, that coincides with menopause, the Chiron return. So oftentimes it's a very emotional time, the Chiron return. And Chiron was known for his compassion. So I think ultimately it's about forgiveness, the Chiron return, and forgiving ourselves, you know. Also, oftentimes we reparent ourselves during that time. And, you know, but it, sometimes with Chiron, there can be a catalyst for change. A person comes into your life. You mentioned synchronicity. Late 40s, a lot of synchronistic things happen. Oftentimes, a person is a catalyst for change, as it was with me with finding Stephen's book. Or an illness can be a catalyst. A failure can be a catalyst for change.
Okay.
Not a prediction, but that somehow, it sometimes expresses itself that way.
Okay. Now you say that Saturn comes around for the second return around 58. What happens then?
Okay. So the first Saturn return, we from youth to an adult, the second Saturn return is we become an elder. And Victor, I don't mean older, because not everybody who hits 58 or 60 is an elder, right? They can be, that's an archetype. There's another archetype available. It's called the old fool. But an elder, you know, it's, you know, at 58, you know, this great passage, we're a baby elder, we're a rookie, but we begin this passage into becoming an elder. And the Saturn return at 58 is the first stage of becoming an elder. And we need a purpose, just like we had a purpose at 29, that we had during our 30s, we need another purpose, and that purpose needs to be based on who we are now as an elder person. Like, I always use the example, for instance, Frank McCourt, who was teaching in New York. He retired, he met this woman and got married, and she said, "Frank, enough, go into the bars and telling your stories, write those stories down." And he did, and that was Angela's Ashes. He published that at 64. That's not a book that he could have written early on.
Absolutely. The old concept of readiness in time seems to come to play at this period.
I've never heard that. That's really beautiful. So at our Saturn return, the second Saturn return, we ask ourselves, what is the task worthy of the rest of my life? And it a lot for many of us, it really comes together at the second Saturn return, late 50s, early 60s. And Ram Dass said, wisdom is one of the few things in human life that does not diminish with age.
Absolutely. Okay. So for those of us fortunate enough to reach our early 80s, there is a Uranus square and then a Uranus conjunction at 84. What can the octogenarians expect?
Well, that's coming full circle, in a sense, at 84. And the Uranus return is a powerful thing. Some at the Uranus return, many people, Carl Jung wrote Memory, Dreams, and Reflections. Georgia O'Keeffe had a big show at the, I think it was the Guggenheim. A lot of things, you know, we come full circle. And it is, in a sense, Uranus has gone all the way around and interacted with every other planet, awakening it and stimulating it and transforming it, hopefully. So we too have come full circle. I mean, Jung would call that becoming individualized. You know, in a sense, nothing left to prove. It's a culmination of a life, but it's also a new beginning. And, you know, I don't want to downplay the issues of aging, because there are things, you know, as we get older, we need to take care of ourselves, and things have, there are losses as we get older. But I think also, you know, that aging is changing, and how people age is changing. And, you know, things like death is out of the closet, in a sense, because people are talking about it. You know, there are these death cafes where people, you know, salons where they go and discuss the end of life, and more intergenerational housing. I think there are some positive things that are happening in terms of aging. And oftentimes, you know, at 84, people do move. They do move to, you know, an assisted living place, or they move with family. But it is another time of change.
Let's just say that people, there are people who are living at these various stages of life. Does everyone respond to the cycle, or do some not hear the call?
Absolutely, some do not hear the call. Absolutely, you know, people. I think one of the best one of the best quotes I heard on aging from this spiritual teacher, Rampa. He said, you people want to know why you age because you cannot change. So changing, curiosity. I love, you know, Oliver Sacks died, what was it, last year? And what did he say? I'm looking forward to being 80. He fell in love at 70. First time he fell in love. And, you know, Gloria Stein said 50 was a shock because it was the end of the center period of life. But once I got over that, 60 was great. 70 was great. And I loved, serious loved aging. I found myself thinking like things like, I don't want anything I don't have. How great is that?
Wonderful wisdom from our wonderful guest, Virginia Bell. Her book is called Midlife is Not a Crisis, Using Astrology to Thrive in the Second Half of Life. Virginia, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Oh, thank you, Victor. You can get my book at bookstores and also on Amazon and other websites that sell books. My website is virginiabellastrology.com, and I have a Facebook page, Virginia Bell, Virginia Bell Astrology, and also another page called You Are Never Too Late. So
obviously, because we are both folks who are living in that part of life where the greatness and the wonders are starting to become really just manifest for us. And I'm having the best time of my life, and I turned 64 in January. So I thank you for being with us tonight and sharing this wisdom. And folks, midlife is not a crisis. So if you're in one of these cycles of life and you need to understand it better, pick up a copy of Virginia's book. It is wonderful, wonderful advice. Virginia, thanks so much. We're going to have you on again.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure, Victor. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And thank you. And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.